solid challenge. So we're going to try and be as efficient with time as we can. Already with a few minutes in the red. But welcome you all. It's a meeting of the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. This is the 27th, is it, of July 2012. This is the eve of the London Olympics. I was checking the countdown there. It's a matter of hours, and we wish our Team South Africa well there. I assume everybody has got an agenda and some documents that would have been distributed, and I just want to verify. But before I proceed, I'd like to welcome in particular the Auditor General and his team. We are always delighted and, shall I say, privileged to have you in person at our meetings, as they say, to get it from the horse's mouth. The deputy, I understand, is out of the country with international work. You know, we're still concluding our UN audit commitments, so I understand he's busy with some of that work, but the AG would be able to better deal with those issues. I'm just going to quickly go through the draft agenda, and you can indicate if you're happy with it or whether you would want to suggest any adjustments, and I'll just explain very briefly what the context to the agenda is. Adoption of minutes. You'd notice we have the last minutes is the 7th of March. 7th of March, you'd recall, at that occasion, we had actually a presentation from the Auditor General on the very same report that is now official and public. You'd recall on Monday he made public announcements on the media and so on the release of the report. At that time when he presented it to us, it was still embargoed. And you'd recall that documents had to be retrieved from yourself immediately after the briefing. So he cannot be accused, for example, as has been before, of having gone to the media and briefed, given a briefing on the audit outcomes before he comes to Parliament, because he indeed, long ahead of this week, gave us a confidential briefing. In this regard. So today it's more the open, formal, you know, briefing. And we've agreed that this is the committee where the general reports of the Auditor General on all three spheres will be presented, because we are the committee that oversees the institution of the Auditor General. We approve the annual reports, their strat plans, budgets, and so on. So equally, the key products that they produce, such as the general reports, must also, as a matter of formality at least, be presented here. We're not pretending to be a scope at any of the three spheres. We are the scope of the Auditor General itself, and therefore we are interested in the performance of the institution. I just thought I needed to just clarify the context there. And linked to that, you'd notice on your agenda, we also have draft reports for our consideration of the oversight visits that we did in Northwest, several municipalities there, and eThekwini, which was as a result of a decision of this committee. You'll recall all those discussions. It's taken forever to produce a report. At some point, the researcher took ill for quite some time and so on. So it was only until yesterday that I got the draft report. I tried to go through a bit of it, but I'm not even sure if all members have it in front of them. Obviously, you haven't had time to go through it. Probably will not be able to adopt it today, but yeah, we'll see how we manage all of that. So those, between those three documents I've just mentioned, there's some kind of commonality in terms of the issues that they are covering. Then there's the adoption of the third term program, and the secretary will talk to that program. We need to look at it in terms of, you know, whether it adequately, you know, provides the framework to do the work that we feel still needs to be done. And of course, there is the outstanding issue of the international study tour, which keeps on, you know, bumping into air pockets and so on. But we'll get to that as well. I put in general because I thought I needed to touch on small few issues. Maybe the AG can also confirm on around the issue of REMCO, for example. We know that we've submitted to the President's office our recommendations, some disagreements here and there between us on what we should recommend, but nevertheless, the matter is before the presidency. I haven't heard any further developments, but yeah, I hope that the AG's office is also keeping abreast with developments there. From our side, I think it's out of our hands now. Yeah, and a few other little things. So that's in essence the purpose of today's meeting. Is there anybody who feels that any of the agenda items that I touched on should be omitted or anything added? Are we happy with the proposed agenda, as I've explained it? I assume it's a yes. All right. I propose that we then maybe skip minutes and go straight to the briefing by the AG, and colleagues can then also use the time in the meantime to just scan through those minutes and so on. I don't even know if we have a quorum, do we? Oh, we do have a quorum, so we should be in a position to adopt. Just make sure that you don't leave without notifying me so that we can get to adopt things before we become diminished in terms of numbers. Is that Mr. Coroner?
Yeah, Chairperson, just I've said to you personally, I just need to go quickly to the Constitutional Review Committee. It starts in 3 minutes just across the street, but I will excuse myself there in after 20 minutes and come back here. So my apologies to the Auditor General as well.
Yes. I'm also a member of that committee, so I do represent me there as well. All right, shall we then hand over to the Auditor General? Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. And to the members of the press as well. Chair, let me first and foremost start off by introducing Ms. Sakane Maluleke. I know she possibly would have been greeted by herself informally and wondered who she is. She is the national leader of our audit operations in the office, a post that has remained vacant for quite some time, which we have been concerned about, a post that is at the center of the discussion we're having here today in directing and bringing consistency, issues of quality, issues of positioning, and issues of improving consistently the issues that at the heart of our core business in the audit office, which is auditing. So we're glad that Sakane joined us about a month ago. She is a qualified chartered accountant. She has been the the president of ABASA, which is the Association for the Advancement of Black Accountants. She still sits in the transformation committee of the profession. So she comes to the office with a very significant experience in terms of making and shaping the building of our nation. And we do think that we are privileged as an office to have someone of her caliber to enhance our nation-building initiative as an institution. So Tsakane, we've been welcoming you since you started. Once again, welcome on board. This is the committee where it all happens, because we can do everything out there. At the end of the day, we need to come back and account here. Chair, I just want to echo your reference to the fact that we have had a preliminary review of these outcomes. This happened at a time we were still consulting with the leadership throughout the country, starting from the Speaker's Forum, going into the various legislatures, engaging with the legislatures there, going into the Premier's coordinating fora, which involved the mayors and the heads of the executives in the provinces, going into the areas of national leadership, cabinet in particular, and also having dealt with these and shared these results extensively with the coordinating ministries at national at a national government level. So there has been quite a lot of consultation with this, and the highlight of this was when we also met with the National Council of Provinces, when they had provincial representatives as well as representatives from some of the committees in the National Assembly as well. So other than SALGA, we have consulted with each and every leadership structure in the country that has everything to do with local government. We're still awaiting an opportunity to engage with SALGA. They have nevertheless been briefed on the written content of the report, but we haven't had a debate with them to get a clear position on what it is that they will do to respond to these messages. Having had that, Chair, this Monday, there was an opportunity for us to present this report, therefore, to the nation, and have had an opportunity throughout this week to present ourselves through the various media channels in responding to some of the national and citizens' responses to these reports. What I would like to highlight, though, which is significant, is that over and above the media briefing that was held in Johannesburg, there was a media briefing in each and every province that was led by the Premier to also amplify the messages that are contained in these reports, because all the Premiers have been engaged, and all the provinces have done that with the exception of the Free State. We're still going to have a date as to when it will happen in the Free State. In essence, all I'm saying, every corner of the globe, of the country, ought to have had an opportunity to get the message through the various media channels, because of that enthusiasm by the premiers to also support this process of informing the nation. So what in essence is contained in here, I today don't intend going into the detail of the report, which we have had an opportunity to go through in March. The hard copy has also been tabled in Parliament. But I just want to get to the core of what is contained in this report. It's quite a detailed report, it's quite elaborate, it's very thorough in identifying the issues, but in a sense, is highlighting three fundamental issues, which are contained at right at the end of the slide of the slide presentation. If we can go to the last slide, it's highlighting the fact that we are reporting these results against a clear target that we're aiming for as a country, and that target is achieving clean audits by 2014, and it's giving us a barometer as to how far we are from achieving that target. And in this respect, what is being shown here is that we do need to have a few actions taken in order to get closer to clean audits by 2014, which is in 2 years' time. At the moment, only 13 municipalities and I think 4 municipal entities have achieved this target. We have had some municipalities and entities that have regressed. The beauty is that few of these municipalities have regressed. And if I can go by my recollection, we have got 3 metros that used to be in this space. Eteguini was once here for 1 year, about 4 years ago, I think. And they regressed, and they have not as yet come back. And the main issue around Eteguini is the issue of supply chain management or procedures and controls around procurement. Johannesburg has been in this phase for about 2 or 3 years, I think. Yeah, about 2 years. They fell off last year in 2010 on account of the migration from the system that they used for their billing process to a new system which its project management was not efficient enough to manage continuity of the revenue process and billing process. And even this year, they still were struggling with strengthening those controls. But we are hoping that now that there is stability also in the leadership and more support being brought into that area, they will be able to recover from that setback. Cape Town was also in the space for about, I think, 2 or 3 years. They fell off last year, once again, on account of controls in the area of supply chain management or procurement. There were 2 municipalities in the Northern Cape that used to be in space, Carrierback, which is a small municipality that has got amazing disciplines when it comes to controls, even though they still have unqualified reports, but it's one of the shining stars in the Northern Cape. And also Francis Barrett District Municipality, which was here for about 2 years and has also gone back. They had an unusual regression, which amounted to a qualification in their cash flow statement, which could not balance, which is something very unusual for the cash flow statement not to balance. There was 1 or 2 issues on the supply chain which relates to the previous years. So I'm highlighting this to indicate how important it is when we have achieved a clean audit to sustain it, and to also emphasize the point that everything has got to be done to make the municipalities that are at this space to stay in this space. What is encouraging here, Chair, and I want to stay on this so that even though it's only a few municipalities, we understand how important it is that these municipalities become an inspiration for others to then rise to this occasion. We've got 3 municipalities in Mpumalanga that have achieved clean audits and have last year, and they achieved clean audits again. By last year, I'm referring to 2010, sorry, and achieved clean audits again in 2011. The one more municipality, which is Gelsibande District, has joined them. What I want to highlight about these municipalities is how confident we are that they have got a sustainable platform to stay on this course for many years to come. Because when we speak to them, when one day you visit them, you probably will understand why we say so, because they have got what it takes to achieve clean audits, which is have the leadership that is determined and want to and would do everything to do the right thing. That is to have an interest and take direct ownership of the operations and performance of the municipalities. They spend no moment to employ people that have got the right qualifications to get the jobs in the municipalities done. They have got performance management processes and practices that are sound enough to make the point that the culture of accountability is the norm within these municipalities. And these are the issues that we just wish every municipality could aspire to replicate in their own shores. And these are not difficult concepts. These are concepts of will. These are concepts of the interest by the leadership to do nothing but the right thing for the sake of the mandate of local government, which is delivering services. And the list goes on with regard to some as well in Limpopo. There are two there. Small municipality, Fetakhomo, which when you speak to the mayor and the councillors, you'll get a sense of pride that we do have municipalities in South Africa that have found the rhythm of how things can be done right. And I'm emphasizing this thing, Chair, so that we don't only speak about these clean audits in passing or in a vacuum and say, yes, it's still small numbers, but I want to put emphasis on the fact that they may be small numbers, but they are an example of what should be done. And therefore, we need to now encourage the rest of the ones that are not far from that ideal. The 45% that are sitting in the yellow block having unqualified reports, but we are concerned about the fact that they achieve the status of fair and true reporting with an expensive and a heavy involvement of the auditors to correct and fix what they could have fixed themselves. That's the simplest way of describing the unqualified report with other matters. Always saying to them, do what these other municipalities are doing. Have a culture within the municipality where excellence is driven by the municipality themselves. You don't have to wait for the auditors to show you what has gone wrong and fix it, and then rise to the occasion in a kind of questionable means. One of the reasons I'm saying this, Chair, is because there's a lot of argument that why make a fuss about the fact that local government is not performing well when there are 154 municipalities that are closer to performing well. What is being missed in that debate is that this has been done in the 11th hour with the auditors. It therefore means if auditors were not there, citizens would have been misled. And only saying, don't run your business to satisfy the auditors. Run your business in local government to satisfy the citizens. In the same way that the 13 municipalities have done in South Africa. And you do have the potential to do that, and therefore all that needs to be done is to inculcate that practice and culture of municipalities and doing the right thing without the auditors being present. Certainly the other half of the municipalities, which is the ones that are qualified, disclaimed and did not submit, need a lot more work to be done in order to correct the errors that could not be corrected even at the time the auditors were there. Certainly the ones that are disclaimed are even more worrisome, I think it's about 18%, because they now give us a sense that they have reported things but there's no evidence that what they're saying has got a grain of truth. And it's a very serious audit outcome, which basically means the norms of transparency and accountability have been flouted to the highest degree. It is these issues, therefore, that make us to make the emphasis that we're making this year. And that emphasis is on the, I think there's a bar in the slide that has got red and green shadings right on the bottom right-hand side. That municipalities have performed in this way for many years, but it doesn't look like there is clear enough consequences that invoked to persuade municipalities to perform differently in keeping with the national ideal of clean administration and eventually clean audits. We have made a specific measure of the quantum of those municipalities. At the time we spoke to you in March, we had not quantified this this statistic, but we did go back and persuaded our teams to identify exactly where this is happening. And this is indeed happening in about, 73% of the municipalities that we have had an opportunity to engage with. The confidence we have of this statistic is because it is based on something very simple. You agree with the municipalities that this needs to be done. You go back at the end of the next quarter, which is part of our visibility program where we visit municipalities every quarter. No one has taken heed of what needed to be done. You go back again in the next quarter, nothing has happened until we get to the time of the audit. And we're left with no other conclusion other than to say when things continue to go wrong, no one seems to do anything about it, and there seems to be no repercussions for not doing anything about what are known actions that should be taken. And therefore we take these two long bars, which is leadership not taking responsibility for what should be done and no consequences for continuous bad practice in municipalities as the reason for directing the nation and I guess yourselves, Chair, and oversight in general, towards this point. We have arrived at this point deliberately to say, unless this is taken care of, you can expect no change in the graph that depicts the audit outcomes. The other area is the area of skills, and I think that has been given a lot more prominence in the public debates that have been going on. But it is a real issue, because you can have a leadership that has got the will, but if you don't have people to do the job, nothing will happen. And it's for that reason that once again we've identified those municipalities that have got no hope to ever getting this thing right unless they fix their skills profile. Most of these municipalities are dependent on consultants. In South Africa, there's close to about 234 municipalities that are dependent on consultants. 91% of them are employing those consultants on top of posts that are filled by people that don't know what to do. And it's only 8%, 9% of the cases where consultants are brought because they are vacancies. Now, this says something about the sharpness of the skills issue and the bringing of consultants at a time when consultants can have nothing to do to rectify the damage of inefficiencies in record keeping in municipalities. In this instance, we're saying, yes, consultants will be a very quick solution to use if we are to at least improve the record keeping in municipalities, but bring them on time, manage their performance, and get them to have a very clear brief as to what they should be doing. get them to fix the basics of record keeping, which is document filing, document maintenance, document capturing, checks and balances of what is being recorded. So all those things that we learned in Standard 6 accounting, this is what needs to be done in municipalities. There's nothing difficult that we talk about here. And that's why we're having this trio kind of root cause analysis as the three things that are inseparable. When we speak to municipalities in our door-to-door visits and we put this on the table, not one councillor said this is impossible. Everyone sees it as something that is doable and can be done overnight. And therefore, we've got every evidence that the will to get it done is what needs to be chored here, and the accountability for those that don't have the will has got to kick in. At the level of the administration, the councillors have got to invoke that. At the level of the politicians, if the politicians that are omitting these expected behaviors, the politicians have got to deal with other politicians. But there's got to be the right level of consequences for people that are just in the parking lot in local government. So that's the first attempt to get to the real reason why things are not happening. And Chair, we are very emphatic on this issue. Unless these are fixed, nothing will happen in local government. Because once these are fixed, then you're going to begin to see a movement in the areas that we are concerned about the most. And we've highlighted in the other busy chart on the top right hand. And that chart is highlighting that we need to fix five areas in local government. Supply chain, amongst all the compliance problems, is one that is tops and highly risky, because a lot of money is spent on supply chain. And we're still finding a lot of errors and a lot of deviations from the regulations in supply chain, in spending the money that is destined for service delivery. We're not arguing about whether service deliveries are happening or not, but always saying this is happening in a manner that is inconsistent with the prescripts of the law. You may be delivering services, but you're doing it with the same people that are working for the municipalities in many instances, as we've highlighted in our reports. You may be doing this by not giving every other supplier a chance to bid for these services. So the notion of and the principle of equity is being compromised quite heavily in the areas of supply chain, and that's the biggest area that is being disrespected insofar as supply chain is concerned. That's where the biggest buzz are. Uncompetitive bidding, as well as business being done with the same employees or councillors that work for the same council or municipality or other government institutions. So always saying, where is equity here? Where is fairness? That is prescribed by the supply chain management regulations. The other big area of non-compliance is the area of the accuracy of information that is produced by municipalities, which is the very last block of the top five blocks. The amount of errors we're still picking up in financial information, in reports in local government, is beyond any measure of tolerance, and it's not getting better. We've got to fix this. I mean, you can't have local government that is dependent on auditors to fix things before a local government can pride itself of having a fair representation of what happened. What if the auditors are not there? It means, I mean, everyone will basically be misled as to what's going on in local government. And it's never, and it can never be a sustainable way of running local government. So we need to fix that as well. And then there's the stuff that is in the middle, starting with the reporting on service delivery. It's the only block that is shaded yellow amongst all the other red. And the only reason shaded yellow is not because it is any good, but we're saying the amount of deviations that you saw last year, which were in the area of 85% of municipalities, has improved to the extent of 70%. But 70% is still quite a high ratio of municipalities that are reporting service delivery programs and projects inappropriately, either in a manner that is not clear or in a manner that is not supported by evidence. Here we're not saying service delivery has not happened. Obviously, saying we could not see evidence that supports what is being said. In other instances, we could not have a clear correlation between what was promised to the citizens through the citizens' consultations or IDPs and what eventually translated into the annual reports of departments. So we need to see better correlation in the flow between the citizen consultation as well as what landed up in the budgets and eventually reported in the annual reports. We are naturally worried about the issue of IT controls, which is the platform where municipal records and information is kept in terms of unrestricted access, as well as security controls relating to this information. And lastly, the area of human resources management is quite weak in terms of the performance management practices, in particular when it comes to human resource management. There are many other dimensions around HR, but it's an area which we can't leave unmentioned in terms of what needs to be fixed. Now, all these issues are resulting in internal controls that we believe fundamentally weak, because two-thirds of municipalities do not have strong internal controls to manage these risks. It's only a third of municipalities that have got fair internal controls, but we still want these fair internal controls. We refer them, there's good. There's three little bars that have got green, yellow, and red. If you can see the shade of green there, it's about a third of those graphs. That's a representation of our analysis of the status of internal controls to manage the risks, five risks that we have identified, of which these five risks are the ones where the modifications in our audit reports, which are shown in the left-hand side, are emanating from. And the reasons why these things continue to repeat themselves is because of the three root causes that I've highlighted, which is leadership making this none of their business, and no one holding anyone accountable for these omissions, and fundamentally having no resources that are adequate enough to run local government records with excellence and pride. Chair, the report is very detailed, is very specific. It touches on how this affects every municipality. It goes into details on each of those five risk areas that I've highlighted. It's very explicit, but we want to make the point that we draw to your attention and the nation this high-level analysis of what needs to be done. And if we can do this, especially the bottom bit, we'll be in a position where we can all be proud of what local government governance and record keeping and administration has for our country. Without these, we can philosophize about whether these have got any relevance to service delivery. That does not faze us. The point we're making is you can't run a business that has got flawed administration. Everything you say, and if you say it has got no basis to support it, gives and leaves us very worried. And we don't want to get into the space of that philosophy, because all we're saying is that we could not see evidence that the administration, local government, is strong enough to give us the confidence that we need for the nation. So, Chair, that's in a nutshell what this report is about. We'll just leave it to you then to guide us further as to how then you could also be a part of assisting the seriousness with which all these structures of government that I have highlighted as having been consulted could work as a collective to fixing these issues that we're concerned about in local government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we're at the point, really, where a lot of the issues have become so clear and clarified and re-clarified that I doubt whether we even have questions more than coming with concrete ideas as to how do we take these issues forward. Because really we've gone through these things year in, year out, this recurrence and so on. And maybe it's the point at which we must start thinking creatively. But let me not preempt the engagement. This is an opportunity to have an engagement, including possible ways through which this committee, called SCOIC, can take some of the issues forward and how best we could drive issues. I see takers. I think I'm just going to follow the rows as they appear, starting with the very last hand there, coming all the way here, and then going to the back from there all the way here. So let's start right at the end. Is that you, Ms. Koronhoff? Pardon my vision, I might skip you, etc.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. You know, it is depressing to listen to this, and if you need to listen for the last 5 years. So my concern is, and maybe I'm not a member for long at this committee, but I serve on the Finance Committee. Do the Auditor General need legislation to do the job he should do? Because it must be depressing for him also to go back to these municipalities and he find exactly the same thing, but he can't do anything. Where is the solution? Is it legislation? And then if that is the case, I think we should become more aggressive as a committee to press for the changes the Auditor General, whoever, going to need to do this job.
Maybe a question really could be elaborated further to say, is the AG satisfied that his mandate, as defined in the law, gives him sufficient muscle to assist in making a difference? Or is there anything else? Bearing in mind that, you know, we have a constitution that defines the parameters of who must do what. It may well be that the problem is not lying there, but it's lying elsewhere. Sorry to elaborate on your point, but I think it's so important a question and a starting point. The next person.
Thank you, Chairperson, and sorry for being late. Cape Town traffic, as usual, from the airport. Yeah, Chair, just to follow an Honourable Koronhoff, it's not depressing, it's extremely depressing, you know, to get this kind of report. But I don't think it's unexpected. From our visits to various municipalities, we've seen what's been happening, what's not happening. It's not unexpected, but I think this just confirms the low level to which administration has sunk. Chairperson, what I'd like to ask, in the foreword, just moving forward, in the foreword by the Auditor General, there are three areas that he has identified as the main reasons for why this picture has been painted to us. One of the things you suggest here, AG, is on page six, is it? I don't know if the page is a number.
Page 14.
You say, in conjunction with relevant departments, my office has actively participated in providing input into the development of solutions to the challenges highlighted in this report. Now, could you just let this committee know what are some of those interventions or solutions that are being proposed from your office, the Office of the Auditor General? Because to a large extent, the Chairperson, and if one looks at the Municipal Finance Management Act, a heavy responsibility resides with MECs and provinces in terms of assisting local government and with National Treasury. But this is not happening to the level at which it should happen. I just read an article in the morning Durban paper as I flew up this morning. Mike Sutcliffe, I think everybody knows Mike Sutcliffe, has said the greatest problem lies with provincial treasuries and provinces not offering adequate support to municipalities. Whilst national treasury does provide support, province does not. Now, I wonder if the AG could lead us into what his findings were and observations as he moved around from province to province in terms of the provincial capacity to capacitate municipalities. The third question, Chairperson, is in a question to the President during question time, I asked about what has been done to take directors generals to task for contravention of the Public Finance Management Act in terms of Section 38, I think it is. And the response from the President was, well, give us an example of who has transgressed what law. And I'm wondering whether the Office of the AG, having gone through all of this, can provide some examples of people who should be put in jail. Because this Act is so clear. Offences, criminal proceedings, Section 173, 174, etc. And from this report, I'm sure there are many takers out there who are ready to be put behind bars for all these transgressions of the Municipal Finance Management Act. So to what extent are we enforcing these laws that we pass? And whose responsibility is it? Is it provincial treasury? Is it AG's office? Is it who's responsible? Is it the council? And this also applies to mayors, Chairperson, and to councillors. They have specific responsibilities, but nothing's been done. My last question, Chairperson, is in terms of legislation for now, is your Section 36, your vehemence, your variation orders, because this is where your supply chain management goes awry. And Durban, that's the problem in Durban. What is being done to legislate on these things? At our level, 8%, you can via. But here there seems to be no limit to it. The variation orders can when you end up with a contract, it can be double the amount that it was originally tendered because you vary the orders along the way. So just some comments on that, sir.
Yeah, I saw the on the news this morning the indicating that the original projected, I think it was $3.7 billion dollars for the London Olympics, I think infrastructure development ended up in $14 billion. But I assume it had nothing to do with the issue just raised. But it just shows that this issue is challenges everywhere. But the next person, Mr. Jane Hazen, you next.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I thank the AG and his team for both the report and the presentation here today. It's certainly been very illuminating, if not depressing, as the colleagues have already said. In reading through the report, it's very clear that there are what I call the three C's that you've highlighted as the problem. It's consequences, capacity, and cleanliness. And if I could just turn to the first one, consequences, and it certainly is the thread that runs through your entire report, sir, that there is a lack of consequences for non-compliance and a lack of consequences for dealing with your reports on an annual basis. And, you know, I want to hear, agree with the Honourable Singh around the facilities both within the PFMA and more specifically with municipalities, the MFMA, for criminal charges to be brought against officials and councillors and accounting officers for non-compliance. Now, you know, I've asked a question of the Minister of COGTA if he could supply the committee with a list of all those municipal officials who've been criminally charged and jailed for offences in terms of the MFMA. And I can tell you, I don't think that the list will be very long if it's even not a blank page. And so, you know, I really find resonance with what's being said there. And I think we need to inculcate that philosophy within the municipal level that where wrongdoing is found, there is a criminal consequence for it. And I tell you, we only need to jail, you know, a couple of high-profile, municipal officials and councillors before the word gets out that actually these regulations are serious and they need to be taken seriously. Secondly, we need to obviously deal with political consequences for non-compliance, because it's essentially councillors that should be doing the oversight during the course of the year. And, you know, perhaps we need to start looking at a new way of doing salary increases at a local government level. Perhaps MEC shouldn't be allowed to sign off, municipalities being able to pay to the upper limit of the gazette without there being certain key requirements in place, one of which could be a clean audit. I can tell you, when you start affecting councillors and public representatives on their pocket and they realise that, you know, if there's a bad audit, they could, in fact, you know, end up financially sore after it. I can tell you their oversight will increase dramatically. I then want to deal with capacity, and, you know, I agree with you, there's a massive problem here. In municipalities that we visited, both with SCOAG and with COGTA, we have some, you know, CFOs at municipalities with no financial experience whatsoever. And with the best will in the world, they're never going to be able to oversee, you know, the audit process to its logical conclusion. And I, you know, would venture to say that in many of the low-capacity municipalities, there's actually very little hope of them being able to achieve a clean audit, because the audit trails and the controls within the municipality are simply not followed up with you. By the time the AG gets there, it's such a mess that there's actually no way, you know, no way for them to get out of it. And then in terms of cleanliness, and I think here, you know, and I look to you for suggestions on how we can strengthen both the internal and external audit functions within a local council. I mean, I served for 10 years as a councillor in Etekweni, 3 years of that at an executive level. And I don't think I ever saw an internal audit report ever tabled in an executive committee meeting or discussed at a political level. And I think that, you know, these two very important functions need to be addressed. And I think your report speaks to that, by the fact that there's things that should be done throughout the year and not just simply left for the Auditor General then to find. And I think that a lot of the problem at this level lies within a lack of capacity and a lack of seriousness around internal and external audit functions throughout the year. And then on just on supply chain management, a lot of the municipalities that we visited, particularly around the issues on vested interests, awards to employees, awards to people in the service of the state, one of the complaints was that they really don't have access to the databases, which clearly the Auditor General and other national government departments have access to. And therefore, it's very difficult for them to run a comprehensive background check without access to, you know, either the national government's Purcell database and a proper and efficient CIPRO search function. And so, you know, I would look to you for advice on how we can assist municipalities, you know, in accessing that sort of information. And then I just want to turn to value for money, because, you know, I think there is a weakness in the auditing that we do. And I've an example that I read recently was in the Bichu municipality, where, you know, they were given a clean audit there, but they found in the one department that in one of the feeding schemes, they were procuring loaves of bread for 25 rand. Now, they were ticking the boxes in terms of the supply chain management, but at the end of the day, was value for money in that municipality actually achieved? And I would look to you to unpack how we can ensure that ratepayers and taxpayers are getting value for money. And then lastly, I mean, you allude to the fact that we're going to miss the 2012 target of 60%. And whether, in your opinion, Operation Clean Audit in 2014 is going to hit its targets, and if so, what do we need to do now to ensure that we actually do meet that target? Thank you, Chair.
thank you, Chairperson. I just want to thank the Office of the Auditor General for actually giving us the tools to do our work. I think I feel very different from my colleagues. I'm not depressed. I think we are armed as a committee to do what the Constitution of the Republic allows us to do. I think in this country we've got enough tools. We've got the Municipal Finance Management Act. We've got the Public Finance Management Act. We've got the Supply Chain Management Act. And the Auditor General has outlined in detail that these acts have not been observed by the municipalities. And the Constitution of the Republic, it allows us as a committee to actually table a report in Parliament and suggesting what should be done, because the Auditor General, as far as I'm concerned, has done his work. All these things that we are saying, it is up to us as a committee to actually put in our recommendations to Parliament, for Parliament to take a decision. And once that decision is taken, action will be done. I don't see our problem. The Auditor General, we must say thank you very much. We need to follow the law to the letter and make sure that we don't need any extra laws. We have got enough tools. Let's use the tools that were. Because you see, the problem is that we talk about these things without actually taking action. We need to take action now. And the action that we need to take as a committee is to table a report and demand that we debate it in the National Assembly, and the National Assembly adopt our report, and that will be given to the government, the leader of business government, who is the deputy president, to make sure that cabinet actually take action. Thank you.
Just as if you were at our study group yesterday. Note.
Yes, Prof. Thank you very much. Like previous speakers, I want to applaud the AG for the explorative and highly scientific report which is given us this morning. Chair, having said that, without creating the impression that one municipality is superior to the other, what are the chances of adopting the principle or culture of each one teach one, whereby municipalities that are struggling a bit can get some tips from those that are successful? This concept we found very helpful at universities. In the case of students who are struggling a bit, they would come together and help one another. Maybe that's an area we could look at. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll start from this side, ending with the whip. Did you have a question there? All right. Whip was last. All right. Keep proceed.
Wrong one. Okay. I think it was in the last financial year, Chairperson, there were also many municipalities who had not submitted financial statements. And the bulk of these municipalities came from a particular province. I think it was the Northwest. When you look at the 10-11 report, it's again the same situation. My question to the Auditor General then is, do these reports come in at a later stage, or are they just never audited? And what is the auditor suggesting around these late submissions or non-submissions? Thanks, Chair.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I have to speak. Okay. Morning, Chair. Thanks. I don't know, Chair, but to me the feeling is that we just repeat ourselves every year. And I tend to want to go to what Honorable Gorenhoff asked, as to does the AG have enough teeth to bite. And I think it's about time, because at some stage, if you remember, I think it was the 2009-10, there appeared to be great improvement in the performance of municipalities. Now it looks like we're hitting a reverse again, which then says to me it might not necessarily be the laws, but it might be the action that needs to be taken in terms of sanctioning even relevant municipalities when necessary. Perhaps also in terms of our own oversight, if you look at the fact that I don't think it's the first time you hear the issue of supply chain management, HR problems, IT, and other errors as indicated in the report. But it's more an issue of what can we do in terms of improving our own oversight to ensure that there is some improvement the next time it comes around to a particular municipality. And we need to find a way of getting a way of saying how do we then ensure that change, a change such as the one indicated, that part of that could be through a debate in Parliament. It could be through naming and shaming. It could be through perhaps sanctioning or even arresting a few of those municipal members who are not complying. Because if the laws are there, then what more can we do except to reiterate what we are saying every time? But unless some form of action is seen eventually, I don't see us moving forward. We'll just be repeating ourselves. The one other factor that I want to also stress out, especially in the light of looking into issues of treasury, we know for a fact that there was at some stage some financial management systems that were being improved. We hear year in and year out in other committees like public service and administration that there's a budget allocated for such things, but for some reason or the other, when the Auditor General then does its work, there doesn't appear to be any change or improvement. We should start querying those areas and ensuring that we actually get straight answers as to what is happening year in and year out. A certain amount of budget is allocated for systems to improve, but for some reason or the other, these are not properly implemented. And if you don't start nipping in the bud what the actual problems are, I think we're going to be saturating every time, every year, coming back and not getting results. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm glad that's all mine. Then I'll take my time. Thank you, Jefferson. AG, I mean, I'll refer you to pages without getting into details. You made it in your earlier remarks about the use of consultants. And in page 36, I've just quoted what you're saying. The same consultants are often appointed close to year end, and the data used by or provided to consultants to prepare financial statements often not reliable. How sustainable is this process of appointing consultants? And can we, with all certainty, say there is a significant transfer of skills from consultants to the officials within the municipality? The second point is around page 38, where you say, just quote quickly. I mean, I think I would assume this is a recommendation from your side, where you say the way forward, where you say executive mayors and councillors should insist on receiving monthly financial statements and to ensure that their proper records and whatever kept being kept. Is it something that you find prevalent among municipalities or ODTs that have received clean audits, and it's something that would say then the converse applies to those that didn't receive a clean audit? The third issue, I think it relates to what my other honourable members have talked about, the issue of sanctions and consequences, because if you look at page 48 of your report, let me just quote from that report. It says that accounting officers did not take reasonable steps to prevent unauthorized, irregular, and all fruitless and wasteful expenditure at 253 OTTs, which is 84%. The question is, I think it's the question that has been asked by my other honourable members. Where are the consequences? I know it shouldn't be coming from you, but where is the national office, I mean national treasury and the provincial treasury in assisting to ensure that there are consequences for non-compliance? The next question, AG, is on page 86 of your report on the establishment of audit committees and municipal public accounts committee. In certain instances, you indicate, I think it's page 49, where you indicate that some of these audit committees are not meeting frequently as they are supposed to do,
and they don't even receive internal control, I mean internal audit reports from the internal audit structure of the municipality, and they don't even evaluate those type of plans. And secondly, the issue of municipal public accounts committee. On your page 86, although you indicate that this is a new trend, it's developing, but there are some instances where it's quite worrying. For instance, the figure is, in certain instances, quite low. I'm still looking for the page. It was 89, page 89, where you indicate per province that a status of establishment of MPA, for instance, Free State, nothing, zero. If you look at other provinces, it's not improvement. There's serious compliance, Gauteng 100%, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape 59, Northwest. But I'm concerned about these two provinces, which is Free State and the Western Cape. The Western Cape is 3%, and Free State is zero. What are the reasons? Why are they not establishing this public audit committee? Are they advancing any reasons to you? The other issue, Chairperson, sorry, I'm about to finish. I've all the time. Thank you so much. The issue of declaration of conflict of interest, which you have alluded to in page 65, where you show that there's lack of lapse of internal controls to keep track of this type of issues. I mean, if you look at the national situation, I, as a member of parliament, declare, the same with the minister, they will declare that these are the businesses that I'm involved in. My question is, do we have that type of system at the municipal level where you find the councillor will declare, or even the key officials within the council, especially those who are dealing with supply chain management, will be able to declare that I, as Asamuloto, I have got business or whatever. Do we have that type of system? If it's lacking, how can we then ensure that those type of systems are put in place? But the other ones are too technical, or the AG, I wouldn't want to bore you with the details, but it's mainly related to the capacity within the department. I think it's page 81, which I think is a positive thing, the positive development that we are talking about here, about for the phasing in when it comes to the skills of CFO senior management, and you talk about the phasing in period which ends in 2013. The question still go back to the earlier statements that were made by other honourable members. Who is supposed to ensure enforcement of these things if they are not being done at the municipal level? I think, Chairperson, that's all that I wanted to say. But the more technical one is around the valuation of non-current assets. In your report somewhere, I've lost track of it. It's one area of non-compliance, and I assume there's no technical capacity to be able to do the necessary valuation every year and say this is the value of our non-current assets.
Yeah, I like Matt Tolle's argument that rather than be despondent and bury our heads in the sand, we should raise our heads and say, what does the Constitution mandate us to do? And in part, it touches on the very first question: is there anything more that could be done to strengthen the mandate of the Auditor General? Maybe we at some point need to all come under one room and revisit our constitution and ask ourselves very serious questions. What does the constitution expect of who to do what? And how serious have we taken our constitutional mandate as the different role players in this beautiful rainbow democratic dispensation of ours? Including ourselves as Parliament, including ourselves as court, and some specific suggestions have been made in regard to us. We, as this committee, have taken a decision to say, although we're not a scope, we're going to go out there, visit auditors, see for ourselves what's happening. And this report here is very thick and very detailed of the visit that we did in the Northwest and in KZN, which was not the first. The year before, we did Mpumalanga and Limpopo, got the same issues. We reported to the House, etc. What more should we be doing to help to change the situation around? That is the question. We've had a session, I think, a year or two ago in the old assembly where all the key law enforcement agencies, Willy Hofmeyr's asset forfeiture, prosecuting authority, AG's office, public protector, all under one room, saying, how do we ensure transversality in the way in which, as a collective, with our respective mandates, can respond to these challenges? We've called the Accountant General before us to talk about the accounting system and ensuring that capacity is built amongst auditees to effectively implement accounting standards, etc. And of course, the Auditor General regularly. Last time we had a public service portfolio committee convening us as at last time, where we had the Public Service Commission presenting its recent report. That was before the recess. And FOSAD was here, which is the forum of DGs, to respond to that report. And we were saying, as the cluster in the governance section, you know, what more can we do to address the situation? So there's been attempts, and of course the AG started with giving a whole list of consultative processes at leadership level, etc., that has been done following our presentation in March, leading to the release of this report, etc. And that is something that happens every year. So there you have it. Where to from here? I'm not sure whether the AG should be the one to give the answers or whether we should be giving him the answers. But AG, questions have been asked to you. It's your opportunity to respond.
Chair, let me respond to the question of the whether our mandate is adequate as the audit institution, because every other question that has been raised will have a bearing on that question. And I'm going to make it a personal comment, not the comment of the institution. Personally, I believe this institution has got a mandate that is adequate. I believe this institution is carrying out its mandate completely and adequately. I believe this institution is doing everything it is expected to do. If one reads the letter of the Constitution, I also believe this institution has gone beyond that call of its mandate to get to a point where it lends a hand to government in all its structures, from executive to oversight, to assist with finding solutions to what we have reported. And we are picking up on this additional mandate from our colleagues internationally, where as part of the responsibilities of a supreme audit institution, we need to be seen to be making a contribution towards building the confidence of the citizens of our nations.
And we can't do that adequately unless we get to the point where we get our reports and the messages that are contained in our reports to be taken seriously and acted upon. So our mandate is to bring about complete insights as to the status of governance in all the governments that we are operating in as supreme audit institutions. There are jurisdictions where auditors generals do something more than this. And personally, I would not suggest that be done in our case, where auditor generals are also doing the work of prosecution. In this country, we've got competent prosecutors. We are not prosecutors, we are auditors. That's the only difference between us and those jurisdictions. So from what we are doing in the South African context, I believe our mandate is adequate. I believe personally our legislation is adequate. What we cannot do is to do the work of other people. There's a page in our report, I can't remember what page it is. This page is analyzing what it is that has been done at the level of the national executive, provincial executive, national legislature, provincial legislatures in responding to these issues. If you look at that page is all red. We highlighted that point last year when we put and presented this report and the PFMA report. We're highlighting that point again in this report. And unless those other players in the constitutional framework, that's right, unless that gets fixed, I would not personally, fortunately my term is ending next year, but I would not have supported anything that leans towards changing the legislation of this institution to do other people's work. Our constitution is the most powerful constitution I've ever read. It provides every sphere of government, every layer of government, every structure of government, a very clear responsibility. And if all of us can just do our bit, none of the stuff we talk about here today would ever see the light of day. The only reason it is because we are not all doing our work. And this report is very specific on that. And that is why before we presented it, we spoke to every one of those stakeholders personally, directly, have a debate with them, pointed out to them that you're not actually doing your job. So when we talk about the consequences politically, we're talking about consequences right up to the level of the National Assembly. When Parliament doesn't do its job, what happens to the parliamentarians whose job it is to conduct oversight on these issues? At the legislature provincially, what happens to those politicians? At a local government, what happens to those politicians? I mean, we're not gurus in law, we're not gurus in issues of legislation, but, I mean, we're coming from a common sense perspective. If there are clear parameters within which we need to operate and someone doesn't do what they're supposed to do and nothing happens to them, and that's the essence of this report, are we ever, as South Africans, ever going to hope to ever entrench and strengthen the democracy of this country? So this report this year is highlighting these things at a superficial level. Next year, the tone of this report is going to be saying we've highlighted what needed to be done. It has not happened. We're going to go deeper into why it has not happened. You know, I know that's going to be an even much more tougher question to respond to, but the bottom line is, unless we get people to do what they are paid for by this government, you know, we need to really do our own self-introspection collectively. And I'm more than willing as the Auditor General to also be criticized if there's something that is a shortcoming in what we could and should be doing more. within the confines of the existing legislative parameters. So I would not entertain personally, and I want to be seen here to be talking with a personal, at a personal level, to be advocating for any possible change in what we legislatively are supposed to do. I believe it, we're doing it with the extreme level of excellence. May sound like we're patting ourselves at the back. I know we've got shortcomings. We always put those shortcomings here in SCOWEC, so that we also are guided on what we can do more. And we always take SCOWEC's guidance and advice on those things that we need to improve on very, very seriously and go back and act on it. The essence of the discussion here today is all about asking questions to me, what should be done, asking questions to me, why are things like this. I'm saying you should be asking yourself those questions. The report is in front of you. All that needs to be done is to act on it. So the answers to those questions are self-evident, really. They don't need to be, unless I'm going to repeat myself. I mean, that's the only thing I can do. I mean, all these questions that have been asked here, I've got a list of all of them in front of me. They need no response from myself. But these questions need, we put this thing very sharply in the session we had with the NCOP, that we have given the NCOP, for instance, the opportunity to sit with us every quarter, to be given the details and the status of internal controls in every municipality in the country. I put it to them and said, NCOP, you have not made yourself available to know what is going on. Now, when you don't do something as basic as finding time in your diaries to be briefed about what's going on, how are you ever going to do your work? It's the same issue we're debating with and struggling with the committees of parliament. We keep coming here, we keep having sessions, we keep having extended discussions on how we can get the portfolio committees of chairs to be briefed about what is going on in the whole of government, so that when we have the opportunity to sit in our individual committees, we go there, at least as chairpersons, with a much better insight as to how to zoom into the issues that are pertinent in order to advance confidence in the way government runs its affairs. We don't have sufficient time to do that in a manner that the chairs collectively receive this message. We've been engaging with the Honorable Frolic on this one, and I hope it's going to eventually come through. So I'm trying to highlight some of the obstacles we're putting to ourselves as Parliament to be able to have a much more direct ability to respond to these issues. And until such time as that mechanism is created, I get frustrated by very few things in life. This is one of the things that frustrates me. When we offer support and people don't make themselves available for that support. And Parliament is one of those culprits. The legislatures in provinces are equally the part of those culprits. The issues we raise in this foreword is saying you can never have effective oversight in South Africa unless you get public accounts committees and portfolio committees to work as a unit. Otherwise, this fragmented way of conducting oversight is going to get us to a point where these issues are going to be the order of the day, year in and year out. Because the way in which we see them in shades of images. We don't have a collective way of containing these issues and getting the executive to be orderly in the way in which they run the administration of government. 3 years in a row, in fact 4 years in a row, that has been a consistent recommendation in the forward of these general reports. You can go through our general reports for the past 4 years. That's a standard statement.
this team here that is sitting in Parliament has been trying every bit of opportunity to get Parliament to work as a collective unit. We do have, for instance, now an honourable members, an oversight model, which when you read it, I mean, it's a magnificent piece of document. If only we can put that oversight model to practice and give ourselves an opportunity to listen to and get insights from institutions that have got those insights amongst those institutions ourselves and do it continuously, we really would be in a position to deal with these issues here. Once again, this 2014 is not a pipe dream. It is achievable. We just need to change all the red shadings in our model of operations to green. And if we can transfer that red to green, and it's something that I've said to one of the people that spoke to me this week, it's a matter of flipping a coin. It can happen overnight. And we can get things to be orderly. Now, the question is, how do we flip that coin and get all of us to work in some form of a coordinated way towards oversight, towards administration, et cetera, et cetera. We're doing a lot of work in the interventions I'm referring to in the forwards. One of them is what I'm harping on now. And we're not going to be persuaded otherwise to give up on getting Parliament to organize itself properly in terms of running its oversight. So that's one of the interventions we're doing with the oversights, nationally and provincially, and local government as well. We're doing a lot of work with the coordinating ministries, that is the ministries of finance and COCTA in the provinces, to get them to beef up their capacity, because unless that capacity is beefed up, they will have very limited opportunity and ability to monitor the performance of municipalities. And they will have very limited capacity to support and provide guidance to municipalities. So these are the things that we are focusing on. We're trying to focus on the things that are going to have the bigger impact. And building capacity of those entities is what we are placing a lot of emphasis on. Working a lot with the municipalities, certainly, nationally as well, because at a national level as well, the issue of building that capacity to monitor and provide guidance is also another significant issue that needs to be given attention. And gladly, our interactions with the coordinating ministries nationally has given us a greater sense of confidence that we can flip this coin and get these things going very, very quickly. So it's about building those pillars that are fundamental and strategic enough to get everything else to start working orderly. But if we're going to try and target these issues in an isolated case, we're never going to win this battle. So our report and our interventions are looking at those pillars of strategic significance that will get the building to be rock solid, and then everything else around the structure can then take care of its of itself. So Chair, that's the question around our legislative requirement, our mandate, what we're doing as part of this mandate to not fold our arms but support. It's about bringing insights that will help government to improve at an oversight level, at an administrative level, including provinces, because examples of transgressions, for instance, can easily be picked up when you've got a model of oversight and supervision that is well-structured. Otherwise, you're going to keep picking these examples accidentally, and we will not have a sufficient evidence to even act on them and even respond to them in a manner envisaged by the law. So we need to fix the ability of monitoring this performance so that it is strengthened to have a case that can be prosecuted with success, or a case that at the level of a disciplinary process can be dealt with quickly and successfully without, I mean, wasting and spending a lot of money debating on flimsy instances of transgression. So the absence of that ability to do proper monitoring is what we are focusing on. We're saying strengthen this monitoring on the day-to-day activities, checks and balances, etc., etc. It includes where the risk is highest, which is supply chain management. Deviations, what can be done about them. For us, it's something as basic and as simple as having checks and balances every step of the way. And we provided recommendations of what controls can be put in place to prevent those transgressions from happening. But when they get omitted, they get omitted in many instances because the very same people that are supposed to be managing them, identifying them, are not doing that job. And therefore, the very same oversight that is supposed to be confirming if things have been done orderly are not asking those questions. We're going to something as elementary and saying to the councillors, before you consider proceeding with your meeting, ask the question whether your report and information has been subjected to checks and balances, and get evidence to that effect. And if you can't get evidence to that effect, it will be inappropriate, we submit, to continue that meeting, because we don't know whether you continue with a meeting in instances where you could find yourself having to reverse the decisions made, because you don't know whether the information you've got, I mean, have got what it takes in order to conduct and carry out your business and make decisions. So it's those elements of the culture of governance that we're saying needs to be strengthened right across the fabric of governance in the South African society. So I accept and can relate to the need to have criminal charges pressed, etc., but the ability to justify those and prosecute them successfully is limited because the mechanisms of doing that are very, very weakened. And we're saying let's strengthen those mechanisms that will facilitate those issues. The rest of the issues, political consequences, capacity of internal auditors and audit committees, certainly can assist if the administration does its job in the first instance. We've been debating with municipalities, for instance, that you can have the best internal auditors in the world, audit committees in the world, if the management itself is not doing their job. It is a futile exercise for the internal auditors, to go out and spend time and money auditing an environment whose answer is almost a foregone conclusion. And we're suggesting that if management have not done their job, that's where the auditors have got to stop and say management hasn't done these basic things that will confirm to us that they produce information that is reliable. And until such time as auditors are happy that that is the norm and culture in the municipalities, there is no justification to proceed to conduct a detailed review of records, knowing that the records are going to be deemed to be wrong anyway, and internal controls are going to be deemed to be inappropriate. So it's some of those smart ways of getting even the internal auditors to focus on the core of the lapses in the fundamental pillars of governance and be firm about raising them until someone takes heed of those and act on those issues. And this is where the audit committees could really assist in providing that guidance to the internal auditors on how they should structure even their plans and structure their reporting so that it's a reporting that inspires the right amount of action for municipalities to move forward. With the advent, for instance, of the municipal public accounts committees, we've been saying those committees are well-placed. We welcome their establishment in many municipalities in South Africa. We regret the fact that they have not as yet been, and I hope by now they have been established in the Free State and in the Western Cape, because they can be providing very useful information and a useful resource, in fact, to providing counsel with the answer to the question council will be asking about the credibility of information. where we've engaged with the MPACs that are now in place, like in the Eastern Cape, we've just done the recent door-to-door in municipalities. We're very impressed with the way in which those MPAC members have found fit in the work and the role that they need to fulfill. And these are some of the governance structures that can be supported and strengthened, but only and only when and if the municipal administration does their work. And their report to council ought to highlight the extent to which municipalities and administrators are doing their work. That's the essence and moral of the message we are sharing in this report. And when these people are not doing their work, then something must be done. It's either they should be trained, they should be changed, they should be supported, and that's where the issue of consultants becomes relevant. We are very clear about the fact that consultants are a layer of support that is relevant, is important, and will be with local government for quite some time. But let's bring it at the right time to address the things that local government is most vulnerable at, which is getting their basics right. So that by the time they come to provide the broader support of preparing information that is consistent with the reporting framework of government, at least they would use information that has been subjected to proper governance, proper accounting norms. And in that case, there will be no contradiction in the reports that we will issue to the nation about the adequacy of the information that the nation is being given. So I want to emphasize that we are not in any way against the use of consultants. What we are against is bringing and managing those consultants in a manner that is not helping us to achieve representation and improvement in internal controls in local government. Something can be done to improve that. This is where we're saying local government and even treasury functions at a provincial level can assist a great deal in coordinating and providing that support. To some extent, even the district municipalities can help a lot in this respect. You know. Issues of value for money are very important. It's just that at the moment, there's so much that's wrong at a basic level that makes it possible for some of these value for money transgressions to find the root in these municipalities. We do believe that if we can fix the basics, we'll have ample opportunity to avoid, without having to do value for money audits, areas of people benefiting unfairly in those municipalities. And the only reason it's happening is because the fundamentals of supply chain are just not entrenched. And if those fundamentals of supply chain are not entrenched, which is, for instance, issues of competitive bidding, if it's not in place, it's possible for people to be charged, 100 times the price that they should have paid. And more than 60% of the municipalities are vulnerable insofar as competitive bidding. So no wonder these things are happening. So let's fix that, and then we'll make sure that some of these things are taken care of. Obviously, this is not easy, as I say, but at least let's get the basic and fundamentals right. Then we can start looking at a lot more intense measures of scrutiny and interrogation that will pick up value for money problem that municipalities find themselves in from time to time. The other issue that has been said here is access to databases to pick up areas of conflict of interest. I fully concur with this. This is where engagement with the provincial treasuries in particular could assist in creating the ability for assistance and support for municipalities to help them in this respect. But if those treasuries provincially have got inadequate capacity to support municipalities. Opportunities as basic as these will not find a comfortable space to operate. And that's why our emphasis is to capacitate those treasuries provincially so that opportunities for supporting municipalities on where it really matters, like databases for supply chain management, scrutiny, can then be done a lot more meaningfully and systematically. Otherwise, the dependence will always be on the external auditors to find these issues, and by the time we find them, it's way too late for municipalities to have done anything about them, and it would have translated itself into irregular expenditure. Unless, obviously, the other opportunity would be for us to be able to do those pre-audits before the municipalities make decisions, but even there, we've got limited capacity to be able to provide that to every municipality in the country. So we need to strengthen the capacity of the treasuries to provide the support, and then we can be able to work together and see how we can share the load to eliminate this this risk. Yeah. The notion of one teach one is a very, very positive comment. It's something that we would support wholeheartedly. It's something that makes us, when we present these reports, we find time to dwell on these municipalities that have done well. They may sound to be only a few, but they do provide a source of confidence for all of us that it can be done. And all they're doing is everything else that others are not doing, to do checks and balances, to for the leadership to be able to show concern, and for the leadership to have the right mechanisms for performance management and consequences where things are not happening right. And most of them have made it very clear that they will not take any shortcuts when it comes to skilling their municipalities with the right people. But it's a question of political will. It's a question of leadership will. Because I believe that everyone in local government knows what the right thing to do is. But to get them to do it, we'll need to find an answer elsewhere. And that answer lies in the effectiveness of oversight right across the board, from local government level to provincial government and to national government, including the support at the level of the ministries that monitor these municipalities and for which most of their funding is emerging from for the municipalities to function. So as long as we can strengthen that, which is the essence of what this report contains, and all of us do our bit, we will continue to also do our bit, we should be able to see the way forward in resolving these issues. These late submissions, for instance, they're mainly prevalent through in the province of the Northwest. There were subsequent submissions, which is why the number has reduced from last year, but it just recurred again in the year in which we were auditing. I'm glad, nevertheless, that having raised this with the leadership in the province, including the Premier, great strides have been made to curb the recurrence of this situation. It was unfortunate that it also spread into other provinces like the Northern Cape and the Western Cape, but these provinces are also doing something to cap these. In other provinces, it's happening in a few instances, but predominantly in those three provinces. It has been noted and commitments have been given to provide sufficient support to eliminate it so that we don't go back to where we used to be when MFMA was introduced. Yeah. Chair, I've tried to respond to almost every question. There may be one or two questions I may not have responded to directly, but overarchingly, our plea is to get every wheel of the constitutional framework of governance in South Africa to do its part. And there will be no need, in my view, for any changes to the legislation of the Auditor General to look at whether or not nothing more can be done. Otherwise, we'll find ourselves intruding in other people's terrain in terms of managing the collective the collective role of government entities and institutions. But I can respond to any specific questions I may not have touched on if in my submission of the answers.
We're going to take a tea break. Our tea is ready at 11 o'clock. And then when we come back, we'll look at how do we take this process forward, including how we conclude or take the other issues forward, our oversight report, which still needs to be looked at, etc. But from my side, I just wanted to highlight that the issue has been raised about what are we doing, what are we going to do, what have we done? Firstly, as this committee and more broadly as a collective of committees in Parliament and, of course, ultimately, as Parliament, the Assembly, plus the NCLP. I just want to start by saying that when I assumed my role in 2009, I was warned that this committee meets at best twice a year, and you probably have very little to do. And hence, I accepted responsibilities elsewhere on the Magistrates Commission, which is very busy, and chairing review of rules. And by the way, we're going to be rewriting the rules of Parliament altogether, which is another daunting task that is ahead of me. And one, in a sense, has the advantage of serving in the Rules Committee, where you have an overarching picture of the engineering of the institution and asking questions, some of which have been raised this morning, about our oversight model, which was engineered and adopted there and has become one of the relevant tools that have been engaged upon today. We need to begin to go back to some of those issues and say, given the fact that we've adopted an oversight model, one, have we implemented it to the letter as an institution? And if we have, has it been successful? You know, some kind of an evaluation. Because that might begin to give us some of the answers to some of the questions that I imagine. As SCOEC, as this committee, we have taken it upon ourselves to say, even though auditees do not account to us directly, because if you look at the Constitution, Chapter 4, Cooperative Governance, it has principles of cooperative governance there. It says that government in the Republic is organized into three spheres, the national, the provincial, and the local, and that each sphere is distinctive but interdependent. So we need to go back to some of those key constitutional principles and say, what does all of that mean? We understand that Treasury, COCTA have a responsibility to capacitate at municipal level. In your notes, for example, draft minutes, you'd notice that among the issues that were raised back in March, if you go at the bullets there, is the fact that an outcry that the expected support from provincial executives who are supposed to support municipalities with capacitation and intervention and so on has sometimes not been forthcoming. Go back to the cooperative governance principle where they have a duty of support. Where did it fail? So it starts from the point of saying, as an employee, whether as a cleaner or as a clerk, what is my own conscience telling me in terms of my own sense of accountability for that which I'm supposed to do? My managers, to what extent are they managing to make sure that I get the support, I'm held accountable? And it goes on all the way, right up to the highest level. As SCOEC, back to the point, we've taken it upon ourselves to actually visit municipalities that are actually inflicted, if you like. And we engaged with them. It was not a question of us sitting here in Parliament writing reports and having debates in the Assembly. We debated with the mayors and the speakers themselves. And we said, in this report about yourself, the following are being highlighted. What have you got to say for us, for yourself? They could easily have told must go to hell because we do not account to SCOEX. The Auditor General accounts to SCOEX, not us. But they were very cooperative in all instances, I must say, in that they welcomed us, we engaged with them on these issues. The question is, what more needs to be done? We haven't even gone past the local government sphere over the past 3 years in our oversight visits, just because of the enormity of the challenges at local government. We've been to Mpumalanga, to Limpopo, to Northwest, and just at Ekwini. So we haven't even covered the 9 provinces nationally in terms of local government. We still have to do provinces. We still have to do national departments. All right? And we're only left with 2013-2014, half of 2014. So we need to also look at ourselves and say, how far can we go? How much can we do? And how much are we willing to do? I don't mind us sitting every week, for example. We still need to call Treasury to answer to some of the issues that are being raised. We still need to interact with COCTA. I think we still need to have a session where between the Auditor General, the Public Protector, Prosecuting Authority, how does the transversality of the system work such that if in the course of findings of the Auditor General there's clear, blatant criminality that's being uncovered, and if whoever is the auditee that has failed to take action, including laying charges, because how do the police arrest anybody? How do the prosecution prosecute anybody if nobody has laid a charge? All right? Who must lay the charge? And if they fail to lay the charge, who should intervene and make sure that that actually happens? So we may need to go down to the nitty-gritty and with the entities concerned so that they give us their perspectives about some of these issues. I mean, I can go to town on a whole lot of some of these issues. The coordination of work, starting with Parliament. For example, in my interaction with the chair of finance in the NCOP, Chani, was telling me that actually the municipalities that you've been to in Northwest, we've visited as a finance committee, the NCOP, and some of the issues you pointed out, including some of the political issues, you remember Fender's Dock, for example. He said, no, we know that. We've been, and we know that at a political level, some intervention is on the pipeline and so on. So in a sense, that sort of settled me because remember we were saying something needs to be done there. So I'm not sure we need to find a way of just following up on some of these things to see whether they are being pursued to their national concern. You remember we went to, was it Matlosane, where the lady mayor was being challenged and she stood strong. Was it Matlosane? And thanks to her party, you know, the ruling party came to her rescue to make sure that despite all the challenges that were there, she is reinforced politically so that she is firm to actually drive the change that was needed. And you saw how under her leadership, the smileys had gradually moved from red to yellow and were beginning to show the green. And that touches on the issue of leadership, the issue of making sure that some of these things actually get done. I really don't want to bore you with all the detail. I think there would come a time when we'll have more time to you having gone through the draft report on our visit to Northwest, which is very detailed, and you have read it, that we can come back and decide on its adoption and whether the recommendations contained therein are adequate for purposes of the assembly. But in terms of coordination of work here, I think, firstly, the point about a debate in the House has been raised. We'll follow up, make sure that the ruling party take this thing up in terms of programming, system of parliament, and so on. But of course, we must first produce our own report on this report so that that is the basis on which we can call for a debate in the House. You know, and the issue that arises is, should we be calling for debates on a whole lot of other similar reports that we adopt, our oversight visits that we've done and so on. We may need to look at how do we ensure a collation of reports by different committees on similar issues in Parliament. We went out as this committee, visited those municipalities. COCTA, I'm sure, goes there frequently, and so are other committees of Parliament. Is the right hand knowing what the left hand is doing? Is there collaboration, even if they know? As we know, a hand cannot wash itself. Both hands have to rub each other for you to be able to wash the hands. So how do we ensure that? Does the model, the oversight model we have in Parliament, give us sufficient basis to effectively coordinate and collaborate as committees of Parliament? So those issues, I think we need to, at a certain point, pursue in a very focused way. But at the risk of, irritating you and standing between you and your tea break, let's have the break now, no longer than 10 minutes, perhaps, and then look at how we take the process forward. Thank you.